When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to Consequence Uncut, a series that gives listeners and readers a deeper dive into our features with major artists.
For this episode, we're taking you deeper into an interview with Sheer Mag as they break down their new album, Playing Favorites, track by track.
When we're asking to make press release statements, we're just like, someone in the band is like, you should fucking call out this band and talk about how much they suck. And I was like, I don't want to do that. What if this album means shit and everyone hates us? They're going to look at this song and be like, look who's fucking laughing now.
Yeah.
Look who had to eat it and beat it now, like you losers.
I'm Yijun Zulu, lead podcast producer at Consequence.
I am Paolo Ragusa, an associate editor at Consequence.
Paolo, welcome back.
I'm back again.
I know. So good to see you. This interview with Sheer Mag was so much fun. I've been having a lot of fun just listening to the album. It's giving, you know, Brooklyn Bowl circa 2012. It has that kind of rock vibe. So it's that throwback. And I'm so excited to just dive into this new music in 2024.
Me too. I'm so glad Sheer Mag are back. This is their first album in 5 years. And it's fantastic. I definitely think it's their best album yet. It's their first album on Third Man Records, which is Jack White's record label. And the fit is really perfect. You can tell that this band feels really energized. They're super confident with these new songs. And yeah, I'm excited for everybody to hear this album and to see their responses, their thoughtful responses for this track by track breakdown.
I know. And good job on the 2-on-1 interview. I feel like that can be very challenging sometimes.
It was an interesting perspective, too, because we have Matt and Tina from Sheer Mag. Matt is the sort of principal songwriter, does a lot of the lyrics, helps a lot on the arrangements and productions of these songs. Tina also is the primary vocalist. She also writes a lot of the lyrics. So it was really good having kind of two sort of distinct voices really talk about how these songs were shaped and what those lyrics mean. It's also just great hearing them have some stories about recording this album. And they talk about having Amdu Mokhtar perform a guitar solo on the album, how they visited him in in Ridgewood, Queens to record, and they were playing a bunch of video games. And it was just really cool to hear, some of these anecdotes and how excited they are about this new album coming out.
Absolutely. And it's so funny to hear their different inspirations for each song. Like when they were like, we're going to write a Jock Jams record. And I'm like, Jock Jams and Sheer Mag, these two things are not equal. But when you listen to it, you're like, okay, I kind of do feel that vibe, but it's with their own take.
Absolutely. Every song is so distinctly Sheer Mag. I love the song Moonstruck. That's just one of these classic songs. One of the things that they really do all over this album that I think is just very distinctly them is you can hear slapback echo on Tina Holliday's vocals on every song. And, I think that that's a really great method to put you in a time and a place. Mm. I think when they have so much slapback echo on these songs, it makes you feel like you're in this venue kind of watching this band play the best show of their lives.
I know.
And you can really feel the live energy of these songs, even though they mention them having so many overdubs, so many different layers. But when you really listen back to the album, it feels simple. It feels like you can feel the band in a space playing these songs for you.
Yeah, I would never call this an acoustic album, but it has that live element to it. And
definitely.
I mean, I'm definitely going to just turn the lights down low, pop a PBR and rock out to this album.
Yes, this is definitely a PBR album. It's giving PBR, Rolling Rock, Miller High Life. It's a Miller High, it's a Miller High Life album because that's the champagne of beers and Sheer Mag is the champagne of rock bands.
I know, we're kind of done with PBR at this point, so I'm kind of dating myself. But you know what? If you're an El Presidente person, that too, okay? So... This is just one reason why this interview is so amazing.
So you can check out the full Sheer Mag track by track breakdown for their new album, Playing Favorites, on consequence.net.
And please remember to subscribe to this podcast so you can stay up to date with these in-depth interviews. And now I'll turn it over to Paolo and Shermag for this interview. Please enjoy.
So I'm here today with Matt and Tina from Shermag. Your new album, it comes out next week. I got to spend some time with it, like I said, this week. And it's all killer, no filler. All of the songs are great. What's going through your mind 1 week before this new album comes out?
I'm pretty excited. It's finally happening. Takes such a long road to finish these things. We were wrapping up this record like probably at this time last year. So now it's like a year later. I'm excited for everyone else to hear it. Excited for the album release party. Excited to party with all our friends and family. I don't know. What do you think, Tina?
It's always weird when you like finish your record like a really long time before it comes out. Most people who release music probably understand it in a special way, but I always, it's just like, it's hard to, my joke right now is that when people ask me when I'm excited, I say that I already heard it, so I'm not that excited, but it's cool. I am excited for everyone else to hear it, and it's crazy to think that it's in like a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, we listened to it so many times, and then like, you like are sick of it, and then you're like, I don't want to listen to it anymore. But so it's been so long since I've heard it. It's been like 3 or 4 months since I like actually listened to it. So I gave it like a spin to get ready for this. Oh, this is really good. This is going
to
be sick.
That's great. It's great to hear. That, of course, leads me into asking about this first song, Playing Favorites. It is the title track. This one is, you know, it really reminds me of just those classic band on the road songs. It feels like it's an ode to each other. So tell me a little bit about, why that song became the sort of signifier of the album as a whole. And what made you decide to have this open the album?
Well, it was like the first song that we wrote in like the second phase of writing, because 4 of the songs came from a previous session. And so when we decided to go from making it a 7-inch to a full LP, and this was the first song that was written for like that second and sort of set the tone for the rest of the record. And sort of the vibe that we wanted to capture, which is maybe like a little bit lighter and fun. There was sort of like this real sense of like getting the band back together after everyone had been separated like literally across the world for like 3 years. And it's sort of nostalgic and reminiscing on our early days in the band touring to South by Southwest, going to Texas. Mm-hmm. And just getting the band back together.
Love that. Tina, anything to add?
I've been thinking of it as kind of like, I was like listening to some Boston the other day, and I was like, this is how I met, like the song, like, you know, about like the rock and roll show and just like about music and like how we're all like, even with the crowd, like we're all like having fun and like this is like the point of music kind of thing.
Yeah.
That reminds me of like those Boston songs about like, you know, rock and roll band and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like very that, and I think it's like kind of a song for, it's like kind of written for us as well as like people coming out to see us kind of thing too.
Yeah, it's like a calling card for you guys in this new era of Shermag. Yeah. I'm also curious because Playing Favorites obviously is like got a double meaning, right? Like it's in the song, it feels a little bit more like we're playing all of our favorite songs, but it also, you know, Playing Favorites means to like be a little bit more selective. And I'm wondering if that double meaning kind of popped out to you guys or if there is a sort of second meaning to that.
It's like it's not super deep. Yeah. It's sort of just like if we're like we're in town, it's like we're probably going to want to hang out with our old friends or like revisit the people that we used to know. It gets hard to meet new people every single time that you go to town. So you sort of just gravitate towards the people that you met like in the first couple years touring that are your old friend.
Yeah, and like the last verse, it's like it like kind of talks about like looking to the side of the stage and seeing like all those faces like of your, you know, favorite people in that city like standing on the side of the stage and stuff.
On to the next one, Eat It and Beat It. Some big fuck you vibes to this one. I really loved the lyrics. Sometimes a high-riding woman's got to be a son of a bitch. I would love to hear about what inspired the lyrics here. And I'd also love to hear about this very intriguing bridge solo section where the groove really kind of cracks open.
We wanted to kind of like write like this like jock jam.
Yeah.
Sort of almost like I don't know. They wanted me to like write this song that was going to like call out bands and like start beef and stuff like that. Almost like as a publicity stunt. And like, I was like, I just want to write like a cocky rock song about like, you know, being the best rock and roll band that there is. I was living with my parents at the time, like when I was writing this record, and my dad was telling me about how waitresses used to say eat it and beat it, like, or something like that, like in, I don't know, like, yeah, in the 50s. And
it does
some,
feel
like,
very diner
TV
culture.
Yeah. Well, and at the time we were thinking about calling the record Check Please, like, that's and funny. Having it like have this like sort of like be this sort of, yeah, sort of diner thing. Yeah, it's just sort of a cocky, like, swaggery rock song. And then, I don't know, do you want to talk about the lyrics before I talk about the weird bridge, Tina?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like, it's funny because I don't think it started out this way, but I think it's like, as much as it's supposed to be like cocky and about other bands, there's parts of it that are like weird, like insecurities of our own.
Oh, yeah.
Shit, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's not great putting that out there, but it is funny, like.
No, it's like we're like secretly describing our worst fears about ourselves throughout the entire song. Like, that's why, like, when like we're like asking to like make press release statements, we're just like, someone in the band is like, you should fucking call out this band and talk about how much they suck. And I was like, I don't want to do that, because what if this album meets shit and everyone hates us? They're gonna look at this song and be like, look who's fucking laughing now.
Yeah.
Look who had to like eat it and beat it now, like, you losers. The psycho bridge part was like a sort of a little bit of like tape manipulation.
Yeah.
Like, I showed up to the mixing session like a day late because I had work and couldn't get there to Binghamton, New York, where everyone was practicing. And by the time I had showed up there, the two brothers, Hart and Kyle, who should never be left alone, were there with the mixer, and they like had come up with this like completely insane like middle passage that was really cool, but they turned the tape machine down, they pitched everything down in a way that actually, like, they pitch it down, but the track speeds up, so there's sort of like this like weird moment. It's sort of confusing. And then we started like building, they started building this like sort of psycho, like, don't eat the brown acid moment, like in the middle of the song, where it gets sort of like psychedelic in a scary way.
Yeah.
Like, and then you sort of like, Tina like dunks your head in cold water and like wakes you back up, and it was like, no, you have to like leave, it's time to eat it. Like, you've like overstayed your welcome, you fell asleep at the bar. Mm-hmm. Like, it's time to get the fuck out.
I love that. I love the dunk into cold, ice cold water. I love that image. That definitely tracks. Going on to the next one, All Lined Up. So this one, if I'm correct, was the first single that you guys put out from this new album, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what made you decide to be like, this is the first, our re-entry sort of? And I also, I'm a drummer myself, and I love the kind of subdued drum beat on this. And I definitely was detecting some bongos, I think, or some marimba, mm-hmm, or some kind of auxiliary percussion. So I'd love to hear also about that drum beat, if you guys have any stories about how that came together.
Well, it's like, I'm sure that Kyle, like the lead guitarist, and like he plays drums. I've always thought of that song as sort of like a sleazy, like sort of like Steely Dan song about like playing pool and staying up late on like illegal substances. And it's sort of like inspired, it's like sort of like just like a druggy, like sleazy, vibey song. It's the first single because, like, the label wanted it to be.
Really? So that
and
was,
after,
it was out of your hands.
And we could have chosen anything, but after years of choosing our own singles, we were actually excited for, like, some guidance.
Yeah.
Like, in that direction. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, that song is one of the, like, well, we started out, like, with these four songs that we recorded, like, way before the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And All Lined Up and Mechanical Garden are like the two that didn't change from that we had previously recorded. And so that song was like kind of at a different time than everything else, but.
Right. It comes from like the same sort of depressing era as the four like songs from the original session, Mechanical Garden, Gold, or All Lined Up
and Moonstruck.
And they're all just sort of written in a sort of more depressed place. So there's kind of like this, like, you like have the hangover, but the night isn't over yet mm-hmm. type of vibe with like all lined up, just sort of chasing the night maybe further than you should. But yeah, that's like one of the original songs from the entire session of the record. It's cool that it made it onto the record basically in the original shape that we recorded it like 3 years ago.
Fascinating how that works. Time, right?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, so on to the next one, track number four. We have Don't Come Looking. This one has such a really, it opens with such a gorgeous acoustic guitar sound on this. So I'd love to hear how the elements sort of fell into place with this song, the way it was arranged. And I really love the message of this one. Don't come looking for what can't be found. Really ends on a kind of positive note, you know, despite having a little bit of, yeah, kind of urgent sort of, how do you say, like, there's something gnawing at you, I feel like, despite mm-hmm. that positive message in the end.
Well, I can speak to the arrangement. I mean, I think, like, Kyle and, well, we wanted to have, like, sort of an Eagles, like, take it easy type of song. Mm-hmm. We hadn't really played, like, haven't really explored sort of, like, I don't know if I would call it alt country or something like that.
More heartlandy. Sort of like, it's got like a heartland vibe.
Yeah, just sort of just standing in like the middle of a field of grain with yeah. like a giant like 12-string guitar, like just drumming it. Like, and that's actually, it's a very simple song. I mean, every once in a while, like, you got to throw a song in there that doesn't have 14 chord yeah. changes, and that was this one. And I feel like when we write simple songs like that, they tend to be some of our like most effective ones. I mean, this is just another song that they did a really good job writing and recording. Like, I mean, yeah, I think like the, don't really have another reference besides the Eagles. But I don't know. What do you think about the lyrics?
Yeah, I am. I mean, when we were recording, we were trying all these different, like, this one was really one of the tougher like ones to do, record vocals on, and like, and we just like kind of like started from scratch, like erased everything, and just like I just sang the entire song in like kind of a different way, and like did some different things in the chorus, and like kind of like was trying to channel like some country, some female country singer vibes, like, and it turned out like way better than what we'd been like doing it before that for hours and hours.
Yeah, we did end up doing this for a very, this was a very long session.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the themes of the lyrics a lot. There's sort of like, there's this like magical realism that I was trying to evoke, sort of like early American folk tales, like the seventh son of the seventh son, like, is like a very like powerful, like magical thing. I like the wishing well imagery, and sort of just like, I don't know, just sort of like this like short story almost, like about like, it's like a folk tale. It's like this like sort of weird man falls down a wishing well and is just like following this woman across, you know, across the country as she like moves from place to place trying to like escape him. It's not like quite It Follows. That's just like what it sounds like to me right now.
Yeah.
But just like, yeah,
it's,
something like that.
It's got like an origin story vibe, kind of.
I mean, it's yeah. also like, yeah, it's about kind of like trying to get away from this person in your life that's like torturing you and like keeps trying to come back in with these like intentions you think are pure, but it always ends up like terrible and then being a piece of shit also.
Yeah. Well put. Wonderful. On to the next one. I Gotta Go. This one feels like a classic, another classic Sheer Mag song. I would love to, this one's a very specific question, but I would love to hear about the choice to have those two kind of like empty bars leading into Tina, like blurting out, I gotta go. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like in between yeah. the verse and the chorus, those two empty bars where you just kind of let the momentum stop and then you like hurl into, I gotta go.
Because it's funny. I don't yeah. know. Like when I was like at, I remember showing this song to my dad, like after I wrote. And he just like laughed at that part. And I was like, that's kind of what I, it's like, I want people to like laugh at the song or whatever. But it is like it kind of has like this like weird comedic timing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, it's sort of trying to evoke like when you're like laying in bed, like with somebody and you're like, oh fuck, I have to go to work in 30 minutes. And then like you kind of fall asleep again and then you like look at your phone. Oh, I have to go right now. Like, I have to like leave. I'm like going to be late for work. Not like manic in the bad sense, just sort of like you're late.
Yeah.
Very important.
There's an urgency there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tina, anything to add on your great, hilarious vocal take on I Gotta Go?
There's always some things that I end up doing that I that seem insane that end up working out. So hopefully, yeah, I hope everyone finds it as hilarious as you and Matt's dad.
Wonderful.
I mean, the scatting part, I think, is I enjoy a lot. Tina was initially resistant.
Really? Yeah, there's like a shooby doo 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 right at the end of one of the choruses.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it was just a huge prank on me to force me to do the scatting.
Well, I think it sounds really cool. I mean, I've always did. I'm like,
you can hear, I don't think. Yeah. Well, you can like hear it kind of in my, which they were trying to avoid when we were recording it, but you can kind of hear my resistance to it in the. I try to do it in the least corny way possible. I feel like the only person who's allowed to scat is like Van Morrison.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like a. Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you continue.
I was saying there's kind of like a funny. It's like kind of a funny song almost or something. Like, I was just like listening to it and I was like, it has one of my favorite lines on the record, which is like.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Now at Exclusive Furniture, get a free gift with your purchase. Update your home at the lowest prices guaranteed on beautiful designer furniture every day. Then choose a fabulous free gift like an espresso machine, smart TV, Sony PS5, and more. Plus 18 months no interest. Imagine beautiful designer furniture at the lowest prices guaranteed. Plus a free gift. Plus 18 months no interest. Hurry, limited time only.
This is Exclusive Furniture, where low prices live.
And better sleep begins.
Every day.
See store for details.
I'd rather crawl through broken glass than to see you sleep on your own.
Yeah.
Which is like inspired from when I was walking around Broadway, New York, and like the Aaron Sorkin version of To Kill a Mockingbird was playing. And there was this gigantic billboard that said, I'd crawl through broken glass to see this play again. And I was like, that's fucking insane.
The hyperbole. Like,
I know. I was like, why would you crawl through broken glass to do anything?
To do anything.
Least of all, to see this fucking, like, Aaron Sorkin play. But then I, like, thought it would be funny to put in this.
No, I love it. I think it's perfect. But there is just such an air of devotion in a lot of these songs. There's, you know, especially a song like Golden Hour. There's just such a just true devotion in a lot of these. And I think that really rings out.
I do like that this song is, like, one that is genuinely like not sad and is fun and is just about like being with someone, and no one is like, it's not toxic.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, it's not like some, what's that? It's like some weird codependent relationship or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like actually just wholesome and nice and like about like going to a beach party and hanging out and drinking like Coors Light or something.
Hell yeah. Love it. Love it. On to the next one. We've got Moonstruck. So this one I really loved. Yeah, more gorgeous guitars. And I really love this opening riff. It doesn't quite as like pop out as much later on in the song, but it was just so bewildering when I first heard it. This is another single too. And I'm curious, yeah, now that you guys mentioned that you recorded it kind of early on in like the original sessions from that potential EP, how it maybe changed or transformed throughout the last couple years.
Yeah, I mean, this song like kind of completely changed. I can't even like remember what it was like before. But it's like got that whole like, what is it? The slide guitar part in the beginning, or.
Yeah, it has a couple like pass
But I do like the original, but I like this, the new version better, which is like so weird to think about, like a song being completely different than what you're presenting to everyone, like with the final product.
It was, the original song was way simpler and it was faster. I don't think it had an intro and I don't think that it had the like insane bridge solo part, which is like, that's one of Kyle's like most insane guitar parts. Like, it just sounds like you're being attacked by like a bunch of like melodic bees or whatever when it's just like, like, you know what I mean, like at the end of before the chorus comes back in. I mean, this song was cool. We spent a lot of time in the studio. We tracked acoustic guitar and piano for like the entire song and almost took away like all of the dancey guitar parts.
Interesting.
And it was just, and then it became like this, like sort of a ballad. The only moment you can see it is right after the first chorus. Like, we sort of like take away all of the, like the bass and like the sort of like perky guitar parts. And you can hear like for 5 seconds, like the other version of the song with like 12 string. And then it snapped back to the sort of funkier arrangement.
Interesting. I also love that this is a love song that features the line, "Come on, you son of a bitch."
Right.
That also was kind of funny when I heard it. So passionate. I love it. So on to the next one. We've got Mechanical Garden. As you said, this is another one that came from those earlier sessions. This one features a great guitar solo from Mdou Mokhtar. And I would love to hear how that collaboration came about. There's also that little string interlude.
The Mdou Mokhtar thing was like a random idea that Kyle had, and we were fortunate enough to know like who his manager is. So we like reached out, and me, Kyle, and Hart went to go visit Mdou while he was staying with his friend, like in an Airbnb in Ridgewood, Queens. And all we knew is like that, you know, he wanted $500 in an envelope. That's... And we drove up there and we hung out. Like, Kyle and Hart went into the corner and set up the recording thing. I don't think, and he hadn't really heard the song. So like spent like 15 minutes, not even teaching him the chords, but just like showing him what E it's in and like talking about where they should go. I'm like on the couch playing like Grand Theft Auto 5 with the drummer of like Mdou Mokhtar and like trying to help him get through the tutorial level. And like we're playing like Mortal Kombat and stuff. And eventually like they do a bunch of takes. They just recorded a million takes and we were like, we'll just edit it into something. We'll sort of sculpt it on our own later, just because we don't want to take up a bunch of their time, like being super finicky about this stuff. But like all the while, like while Mdou's like not playing, he's like looking at like me and the drummer playing like Mortal Kombat 5. And he's just like, we should get PlayStation 5. Like, we should get a PlayStation 5 and bring it back home with us. Like, I want to like give it to like, I just like want to have one for like my friends back home. And then like he just takes like the money and is just like, tells the manager, he's like, can you just get a PS5 with this money?
What?
Like the envelope that we had just given him. And I was like, that's so sick.
So you bought a bunch of folks a PS5. I mean,
I hope so. I hope they follow through. I mean, yeah. But when we were playing Mortal Kombat, he was like, don't buy this game.
He's like, this
get,
like,
too much. Get like FIFA or something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and that string interlude that kind of comes in towards the end is a very interesting. That does feel maybe like it was a Kyle choice.
That was like Hart programmed that all on his synth.
Interesting.
I have no idea how he did that. Like, that was like this song is a crazy studio wizardry song because it's like it has that instrumental passage that they stitched together with like this connecting tissue of that synth of that orchestral string thing. And then it goes into like the guitar part where the like, it's like the tempo is increasing, but the pitch is like going in the other direction. So like that entire thing was just, they went crazy.
Nice. Tina, anything to add on Mechanical Garden before we move on?
I don't know. This is one of my like favorite songs to sing. It's like a very different kind of vocal thing than I feel like I do on other songs. It's, I don't know. It's really nice. And I think that it's fun. Like, we just started kind of learning it in practice. So it's like, it's really it's kind of going to be crazy to see how it like turns out with like just the five of us playing it instead of like all this other bullshit happening.
Yeah.
It's like the most overdubbed song of all time.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like hard figuring out how we're going to get these like 12 parts that are on the record.
I love that. That's a labor of love.
To be done by five people.
Yeah. Wonderful. On to the next one. This one was one of my favorites on the album, Golden Hour. This one sounds very personal. It comes with this huge air of gratitude and devotion. And I would just love to hear what inspired that kind of reflective glow in the lyrics and in the guitars.
There you go.
Okay. We lost a friend. Semi-recently, who was really important to all of us in different ways. So that was kind of like for her. And yeah, it's like, it's hard to talk about because no one like, you know, the Seelies who aren't here are definitely like very solemn young men who don't like talk about their feelings a ton. I am a total baby who cries about everything and tells everyone everything going on in my brain all the time. And yeah, I don't know. So it's like, it's a tough one for all of us to talk about, I think, but yeah.
I mean, it's like, there's, I sort of thought, I like to think of it as like all the things that the two solemn young men can't say, like with words they put into this song. Like there's like a guitar solo, like at the end, which is extremely expressive to me and almost says more than like the lyrics do. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. This is one of like the most intricately arranged songs on the record. I mean, Eden B has like 115 tracks or like something insane like that. This has like a million layers.
Wow.
And we spent a long time like peeling back and adding and seeing what needs to be there and what felt like a little bit too like resplendent, what felt like tasteful and meaningful. Like there's like, and yeah, I don't know. It's written from, yeah, of love and sort of mourning. But I mean, the entire thing uses this like photography metaphor, and the golden hour, I mean, it sort of speaks to like, and the field of flowers, it sort of like speaks to like the fields of like Elysium and the afterlife, and sort of trying to tie those all together and just sort of like pay tribute to the person we all cared a lot about.
That's beautiful. Wonderful. Thank you guys for going there for a track. The next one is another song that's a lot about companionship and devotion, Tea on the Kettle. I love the line in this song, cool air, butter and thyme, eggs on the fry, and tea on the kettle. I feel like that maybe sums up the song. Do you feel it does as well?
Yeah, love this.
Tina
is my
thinks
favorite.
It's too British.
I really?
At first I was like, what the fuck is going on? Why is this song so British? What the hell is happening? But now it's like it's my favorite song. And yeah, it's about a lot of stuff, but I mean, it's definitely like, I like when we say it's about me and Matt's friendship, because I think that's, you know, I love things being about me, and...
Yeah. Well, it's about, like, sharing and stuff like that, and, like, I mean, the other, like, thing is, it's like, I also kind of, it's sort of like this, like, Google love song or something like that. It could almost be about, like, someone and their dog, like, train hopping, like, or something. Like, that's sort of like some of the imagery, like, I feel like I was playing with. But I mean, it's basically just about, like, yeah, a sort of very pure, like, you know, companionship where everything is shared, and it's just like you have each other's back, and if anyone has anything, then the other person has the same amount. But then also, yeah, like wanting to like find the peace of having some place to just like make eggs in the morning and relax from all the craziness of it.
I love that. I'm noticing a theme as well. Just, you know, you kind of talking a lot about these sort of very classic American ideas and this kind of American folklore. That does remind me a little bit of like Paper Time, because, you know, it's just funny to think about how newspapers are people are not reading newspapers anymore. So it does kind of evoke this sort of older suburban idea of, like, you know, you get your paper and you walk over to your neighbor's house and, you know, there's, yeah, that kind of old sort of American idea to it. So I would love to hear, about that song. And also, the air of companionship that there is in that one.
Well, this is an extremely painful song for me because my father's a reporter. And with the death of the newspaper, it's come and it's affected my family in terrible ways.
Yeah, if I can imagine.
No, I'm just... It's a very like light and easy song.
Yeah.
It's like a romantic comedy, like in a song. It's like a, like the paper situation is like a meet cute basically for this sort of like sort of impossible and ridiculous relationship that would never happen, where you get like the girl next door's mail and then you go over there and she's like, wait, I love you, like, or something. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was like something. There's like, the last song is like very sincere. Golden Hour is a very like emotionally intense song. And I thought that this just added a little, this song just is light and has a very good guitar solo. It has like fun backups and it's like just sort of a, it's almost like a palate cleanser a little bit.
Yeah. Anything to add about Paper Time?
Saying Paper Time that much, a word that it means like some like prison, it's like some prison term.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the time you served, like, I don't know, it's like not,
oh yeah, as opposed to like if you get out on parole early,
it's like definitely already a word that does not mean that. And like, I don't know, so that's funny.
It's really funny to think about it being about that.
Very different read of the song in that condition.
So I was like, Matt, what the fuck is Paper Time? And he's like, I think it's pretty obvious, Tina. And I was like, what the fuck?
I was joking when I said that.
It's a very Matt thing to say, though. And I was,
well, in my defense, this is a song I wrote for my other band that's just like a power pop band that isn't, I don't know. Like, I take it seriously, but it's like the song was finished and it sort of was just this idea for a song. And then Kyle thought that it would be cool to adapt. So it kind of has like the silly cheekiness of like a power pop band that without that power pop band that doesn't necessarily bring like the emotional heft that Sheer Mag does. And it's like transplanted into this. But I mean, I still think it works.
Definitely. And we are on to the last song, When You Get Back. Another very true, very earnest song about devotion. And I'm curious, you know, what made you want to end the album on such a sweet, such a high note, for lack of a better term?
I feel like we went back and forth that it like maybe was too obvious to end the record on this, but like, I'm glad we kind of came back around to it, because it was like always kind of like something that I thought would be good as a track to end the record. But yeah, Kyle wrote this song, and he was very, like, I think he was very steadfast in certain elements of it that, like, he would not, like, usually, you know, Hart will have an idea and, like, we'll play with it, but there's parts of this song that, like, Kyle was just like, I don't want to change that, like, I think that's very important part, you know, like, so I think that Kyle had, like, devoted to like how he wanted this song to sound and like the elements that were there. He was just very, you know.
Yeah, this is like a baby of his for sure. I mean, but it's like also something we haven't really talked about the entire record, but I think these are probably some of the best backup vocals on the record. That's something that we explored more on this record than we ever have before. There's like genuine three-part harmonies on this song, and they're not like this. They're not the star, but like I do like that they get a little showcase moment during the instrumental or like during the solo. And it was nice to just all be singing this song because this song shares has a lot in common with Golden Hour for us personally. So it's emotional for us to. And nice for me to just think about us all singing this, expressing these sentiments together as a band.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so, when I listened to it, it was like, it's so sweet that it's kind of sad. Like, I just, like, there's something about the line, song. Like, we're gonna go to all of your favorite places in town. Like, I don't know why it was that one, but that one really got me. I was like, wow, like, it's just, nothing is the same without this person. And I really feel that kind of united sentiment of longing. But it's,
well, there was something that, like, when I heard today, I, like, thought for the first time, which I hadn't been before. There's, like, this sort of, like, sense of denial about this that, like, is almost more painful. But I hadn't, like, really noticed it before. It's obviously, like, wistful and longing. And it's sort of, like, it's a very, like, I'm coping by working through this and, like, talking about this and, like, on a meta level, like, writing this song.
Yeah. Wonderful. Any last things to add about When You Get Back or the album overall?
No.
No?
I don't know.
I love that everybody, like, sings so much more on this record, and I'm excited to force them all to do it live.
Yeah. Live harmonies.
I'm trying to think of what my favorite song on the record is. Pretty into Don't Come Looking right now. I think that one's pretty good.
Yeah, that one's just going to make me cry every time we play it now. And yeah, Tea on the Kettle, like I said, I love that song.
I love Tea.
Happy.
I think my favorite was Moonstruck. That's a really gorgeous song. For what it's worth.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
It's I think it's hard for us to Moonstruck is awesome. I think some of the songs kind of like drove us so crazy that like you can't really look at them the same way that like a pair of fresh ears can. And I think that I really love Moonstruck, but it's still got, I'm still mad. So it needs some time.
All right. Well, I've got one last question, a really brief one before we finish this recording. I want to say thanks once again. My last question is more just a broad question about you guys. I've kind of referenced it before, but you are on a new label. You're on Third Man Records. And I just would love to hear about what that transition has been like, especially because you guys have been at this for so long. And, you know, it's a bit of a different environment going into a new label, you know, new support behind you. What has that experience been like?
I love our new overlords at Third Man.
Overlords.
They're good. I think, no, it's great process so far. I mean, they've been pretty accommodating. Like, well, I think like after so many years of doing this by ourselves, we finally admitted it's just like we don't actually have all the answers. Like, there's so much more to being in the music industry than making music, mm-hmm. and putting it out and playing shows. So, I don't know. We're finally ready to like ask for help with all the other aspects that kind of like round out the entire experience. And they've been very, very helpful with like sort of guiding that experience.
They like listen to our ideas for things, and like, I don't know. It's nice to have also just like not just the echo chamber of like the four of us just like kind of sometimes disagreeing just because of like other reasons, or you know, that like we're just like so together so much for 10 years that it's like sometimes hard to see past like certain things to make a decision, and it's nice to have other people involved who can like give another perspective.
Nice. That's good to hear, because you know, sometimes bands will change labels and they'll be like, we're in a completely different zone. Like, it's way harder. It's way more complicated. 10 more steps to achieve everything. So it's good to hear that you guys are still feeling really empowered